now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good evening, everyone, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. And tonight's show is entitled, you are definitely in for a treat for this one, it's entitled, Cat Got Your Tongue? Saying Four Things That Matter the Most. And we will definitely be looking at what we need to say in the moment. Well, I just wanted to begin by saying that these broadcasts emphasize the integration of spirituality and mental health, and it's all within the context of relationships. Relationships with ourselves, relationships with others, and relationship that we have with God or the divine. It is indeed my great pleasure to be with you here today and every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And if you would like to listen to any broadcasts from previous shows, please go to bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or perhaps leave me your comments about tonight's shows or previous shows, please visit my website at www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. That's www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. And if you would like to be part of the show tonight, please call me at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I will be taking your calls in the second half of the show today. So how is your heart today? I hope that wherever you are today, you are safe and you are at peace. Well, just a quick word about next week's show on June 23rd, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's entitled Peekaboo, Finding the Extraordinary God in the Ordinary. How God shows up in the most unlikely places in and through the most unlikely people. And during that broadcast, I'm going to share with you how I learned that in the most interesting way. I was on my fourth trip to India, thinking that I was going to visit all these wonderful places in which God has been reported. And little did I know that God started showing up in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people. So that's next week's show, Peekaboo, Finding the Extraordinary God in the Ordinary. Okay. Well, I hope you are well. I hope you are behaving yourselves out there. Here we are in the middle of June, and coming up this week, we'll be beginning the first couple of days of summer. We got a summer solstice to get through and that, but we are certainly underway in this year. Well, let's begin tonight's show with kind of a situation where I'm certain that all of us at one time or another have found ourselves. And that's being at a loss for words. As I mentioned last week, this is something that my wife will definitely say that I'm never at a loss for words, but that's an entirely different show. But we've all been there, haven't we? Where we feel like we need to say something and we just don't have the words to say. You know, not in the usual sense where we forget a person's name 5 minutes after we meet them. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But what I am talking about is being in a situation or a circumstance and feeling as though that we wanted to say something or we should have said something, but we just couldn't find those words at the time. And then afterwards, it comes to us much, much later, typically in the middle of the night, that wakes us up and say, oh, yeah, I wish I would have said this. You know, kind of, it's ironic that I think I first noticed this when I was about 9 years old and I was attending my great grandmother's funeral. And I have to confess to you that I was the kind of kid that was always bouncing off the walls. I was definitely a wild child. I was running here and there, always on the baseball field or bringing something home from the creek, which in hindsight was often better left there. Anyway, my great-grandmother's funeral was actually the first funeral I attended, and for a 9-year-old, I really wanted to know what this was all about. I remember sitting in this old, drab funeral home, the western part of Pennsylvania, the coal mining region. There was dreary organ music playing in the background. It was raining outside, and the funeral director looked more like the crypt keeper. He looked like he was up next. Anyway, I'm sitting there on this old crushed velvet love seat, watching my grandmother receive those friends and family members that came to call and offer their sympathies. Now, to this day, I just don't remember any of their faces. But strangely enough, I remember what the people said to my grandmother. You know, usually it's the other way around, where we often forget what people say to us, but we remember their faces. And we're struggling with, remind me again what your name is? Remind me again what we talked about? Well, certainly not this case, because this time, at any rate, I just remembered more of what these people said to my grandmother. They would come up to her, give her a hug, you know, shake her hand and so forth. And they would say things like, well, she's gone on to meet her maker. She's in a better place now. She lived a good long life. And even, keep busy so you won't have to think about her. You be strong now. You carry on. You know, ironically, to this day, their words continue to stay with me, because at the time when I heard those conversations, those words that were meant to provide comfort and reassurance, those words left me kind of empty. I remember sitting there and, you know, as a 9-year-old, I'm thinking to myself, is that it? Is that all we're supposed to say to one another? You know, those words were kind of hollow to me. They left me wanting more. I really found no comfort in these canned statements, because it seemed like one person after another had a ready-made response to perhaps a very uncomfortable and very sad situation. Now, I'll spare you the fact that we could spend the rest of the radio show dissecting how people in uncomfortable situations often force themselves to say something, which usually ends up with people sticking their mouths. And I imagine we've all been there at one time or another, feeling pressured to say something. But as often is the case, not knowing what to say should be a clear signal to us of better not to say anything at all, because more than likely it's not going to come out right. But I want us to go in a different direction tonight. What if, instead of searching for the right words in any given situation, that we first realize that we always have the right words with us, because the right words are in us? What if we realize that we always have the right words because the right words are in us, no matter where we go, no matter what situation or circumstance we find ourselves in? You see, this changes the perspective in the whole conversation, because now our words do not come from a place of pressure, but rather our conversations now come from a place of peace. You see, all of this has to deal with more of being in right relationships, rather than worrying about saying the right words, let alone feeling like we always need to be right. It's more about when we are in a healthy, right relationship with others, then we can be in the moment with each other. We can be authentic and not worry about filling up the space with a bunch of talk. So how do we get to this place? How do we get to this place within ourselves whereby we always have the right words within us, but also live in right relationships with each other? Well, it actually begins with knowing when we should say the four things that matter the most. See, when we come from a place of authenticity in our relationships, saying these four things will come effortlessly and honestly. And interestingly enough, saying these four things brings us right back into funerals, because it's within the context of saying goodbye to our loved ones, where people often struggle to say what they need to say. Are you ready? Okay, here they are. I forgive you for, and you can fill in the blank. Please forgive me for, and fill in the blank. Thank you for, fill in the blank. And I love you because, fill in the blank. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Four things that we say that matter the most. Now, I would love to take credit for coming up with these four sayings on my own, but they're actually taken from a book entitled Necessary Words, The Four Things That Matter the Most by Ira Byock, B-Y-O-C-K. The first time I came across this book, I was actually when the company's Borders was still back in business. You remember Borders. It was kind of akin to Barnes & Noble's, but you could go in, you can just browse, you can walk up and down the aisles. They had a little coffee bar. You get coffee or tea, maybe a Danish or something, and you could take your time. You could spend time in the magazine section. You can spend time in the new releases. And every now and then, perhaps they had somebody, you know, signing a book or some other gathering. But I found myself in Borders one day, and I was walking up and down the aisles. I was just browsing, you know, just seeing what's out there. And I spotted Ira Byock's name. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Ira Byock, he is a physician. He's an author, and he's a huge advocate for palliative care and hospice. It's a great book for anyone who is walking through the impending death of a loved one. And to be quite honest, I became very familiar with his work when I was involved with counseling people through their loss and grief. So anything he wrote is certainly worth reading. Now, I picked up his book, Necessary Words, The Four Things That Matter the Most. I found a comfy chair and I started to read. And before I knew it, I was halfway through this book. At that point, I knew I was going to buy the book. That, and I kept getting those looks from salespeople walking around. You know, the look that they give you that says, hey, buddy, you going to sit there all day, or are you actually going to buy that book? Well, needless to say, I didn't just buy one book. I actually bought two books. It was that good. Decided to pass it on to somebody else. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. As I said before, these four things are indispensable when you have so many things to say to a loved one or a friend who is dying. You know your time is limited with your loved one, and you want to make sure that you've said everything that you wanted to say. I get that. I understand that completely. When my mother was on hospice, she was home, and we took turns around the clock taking care of her, just trying to do our best, that and try to stay out of the nurse's way whenever they were in. But I decided to take the midnight shift, thinking that I would get some sleep, that, yeah, sure, no problem. I'll watch Mom, and she'll, you know, probably sleep the rest of the night. And boy, was I wrong, because about 2 o'clock in the morning, she got awake. And I mean wide awake every night, something around 2 o'clock in the morning, she would just wake right up and she wanted to talk. And there I am trying to stay awake, listening, paying attention and so forth. But I look back now that those 2 o'clock in the morning conversations with my mother were actually a wonderful gift, because we were able to say everything we needed to say to each other. We didn't go down in order of, I forgive you, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. But those topics were covered. This is even before I read anything about Ira Byock. And so, like I said, we had a chance to say everything we wanted to say to each other. In fact, we even planned her funeral right then and there. She brought it up one night and she goes, "Now just promise me that we're not going to have any of that just old sad organ music." And I said, "No problem, no problem at all." And so at her funeral, it was more of a celebration of her life. We had some upbeat music, her favorite hymns, and walking around talking with old friends and other family members that we haven't seen in years. And like I said, it was just a celebration of how she lived and her faith and so forth. So I get that. I understand the need to want to say everything that you want to say to the person. And sometimes we get that opportunities and sometimes we don't. But you know, these words are not just about saying goodbye, but rather these four things and saying these four things are all about restoring relationships. The hurt and the pain that we have caused others, the hurt and the pain that others have caused us, being grateful for every blessing that we just simply cannot repay, and the love we have for those who are closest to us. Being in right relationships is far more important than thinking that we always need to be right. And even if we don't get the chance to say these four things to our loved ones before their deaths, we can certainly say these things to them at any time afterwards, because there is no time or space limit on saying, "I forgive you," or "Please forgive me," or "Thank you," or "I love you." These words are eternal because our relationships with each other are eternal. If you've ever read the book or seen the movie Tuesdays with Maury, there's one quote from Maury Schwartz that really sticks out to me more than any of his other sayings. And trust me, the movie is a gem and the book is equally a gem. And this one quote that Maury says stayed with me, and it's this: "Death ends a life, not a relationship." Death ends a life, not a relationship. And this is so true, because we are more connected with each other than we fully realize. Ours is a connection that extends way, way, way beyond the grave. But you know what the most important lesson is about saying these four things that matter the most? See, it's not necessarily about death and dying. It is, but it's just not exclusively about death and dying. But rather, it's a lesson about how should we be living? How ought we live in relationship with one another? Think about it this way. For as much as it is important to say these words to a loved one who's dying, what, or should I say, who is stopping us from saying these four things to ourselves and to others and to God or the divine now? What or who is keeping us from having a heart-to-heart conversation with ourselves, forgiving ourselves, being grateful for everything in our lives that has brought us to this very moment, and loving ourselves unconditionally for who we are? What or who is keeping us from having a heart-to-heart conversation with others, forgiving them, asking for their forgiveness, being grateful for their friendship and everything in your lives that has brought the two of you to this very moment, and loving them unconditionally for who they are? And finally, what or who is keeping us from having a heart-to-heart, or should I say soul-to-soul, conversation with God or the divine? Forgiving God for past hurts or grudges we may have held. We asking for forgiveness. We expressing gratitude for God's love and those precious blessings that we may have overlooked and taken for granted. And ultimately, loving God unconditionally. Well, if you're like me, I'm sure we have all heard other people talk about being enlightened or receiving an awakening and describing it as being gifted, gifted with something in the moment, being given something that we never had before. We didn't have it, and then all of a sudden, bam, there it is. You see, a deeper truth lies in the fact that we've already been gifted with all of these things prior to our birth, prior to our souls coming into this world. But you see, is it more about what has happened to us that we believe has diminished our giftedness or our uniqueness? Is what has happened to us that we believe has robbed us of this giftedness, our uniqueness? Is what has happened to us that caused us to suppress that uniqueness, and that way we no longer ask for forgiveness or express gratitude, or we want to acknowledge our love unconditionally? What are those things that have happened in our lives that have ultimately squelched all these beautiful things that we not only have, but more importantly, all those things that we are? But it's through ignorance, perhaps, or how we were raised, or maybe just being unaware of that which we already have, that which we already are, that clouds our vision of ourselves and others. There's a interesting Franciscan saying that states that no matter where we are, no matter where we find ourselves in any situation, we should always look for the peace. We should always look for the hope. We should always look for the grace. And if we cannot find the peace or the hope and the grace, then we become the peace, the hope, and the grace. Several years ago, I was standing in a drugstore line, just waiting to check out, just a few items. And there was probably about six or seven of us just waiting, and one cashier. And I remember the person in front of me was just a little old lady who either had some coupons or had some difficulty with her credit card or something, but her transaction was just not going through smoothly. And of course, people back through the line started to murmur. They started to whisper under their breath, and they started to say things like, "Come on, lady, I want to get home. Hurry up. Let's go. Come on. Oh, every time I get into a line, it just goes slower and slower. What's wrong with these people?" And I noticed how the clerk treated this woman. He was very gracious. He was very kind. He was very patient. And this is probably a young man, probably in his early 20s or so. And he just took his time and he said, "Ma'am, you put your card in wrong. You know, just go ahead. Please swipe it again. There you go. Okay. Wait a minute. You have a coupon for this? Okay. Well, I'll wait. You get your coupon. Okay. There. Yeah, okay." And I took off the 75 cents. There, you see that right there? He was just very gracious to her the whole way through. And she was probably up there, you know, trying to check out. And it was taking probably a good 3, maybe 4 minutes. And after she had got her things and she turned to go out the door, I was next. And I said to myself, I can't resist this. I have to say something. And so I go up to the counter, I put my items down, and the clerk starts, you know, ringing those things up for me, checking me out. And I just kind of leaned forward and I just said, "Oh, by the way, thank you for having patience with that woman." And he smiled and just, "Oh, well, yeah, it's no problem. She was just having trouble." And I go, I know, but it just, thank you. It meant a lot to her. It meant a lot to me. You see, we are gratitude, we are love, and we are forgiveness. But what keeps that truth from coming, and what keeps us from stepping into and fully claiming who we are? Is it our hurts, our emotions that we don't make sense out of? Is it our, you know, psychological and spiritual wounds? Is it our pain? Is it our jealousy? Is it our strife? Is it our anger? What are those things that have happened to us that we also allow to continue to take from us our peace, our gratitude, and our love? This is a theme that comes up time and time again, many times in counseling sessions. People that I sit with either have been beaten or abused in one way or another, one form or another. They've been betrayed. They've been lied to. They have trust issues and so on and so forth. But through the bitterness and the anger and the rage and the unforgiveness and this need to be right, et cetera, they also allow the people who've hurt them to take so much more from them. And part of the healing, part of the growth, part of the transformation is not only for them to realize this, but also to get in touch with what needs to happen for you to be able to say, forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. See, perhaps then the transformation we are looking for begins with our prayers and our meditation. Instead of asking for things, maybe we ought to ask for things to be removed. Maybe we ought to ask for things to be transformed within us. You know, please show me what I need to do to transform my bitterness. Please show me how to transform those things that cloud my vision, where at times I live in that denial and that illusion. Please show me how to transform everything that keeps me from having a healthy, life-giving relationship with myself, with others, and with you, God. After we pray a prayer like that, or after we sit in meditation with these thoughts, strap on that proverbial seatbelt and hang on, because that's the kind of prayer energy that's going to take us deep into ourselves. And we really begin to explore what is keeping us and who is keeping us from saying the four things that matter the most. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. I would certainly love to hear your heart on this subject this evening and how your life has been transformed by saying these four words. If, again, you'd like to be part of the show, please call in 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And we're going to take a short break and we will be back in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. Welcome back. We have been talking about never being at a loss for words ever again, because when we realize that saying the four things that matter the most are always in us, I forgive you for, please forgive me for, thank you for, I love you because. These are indeed powerful, powerful statements that we can share from a place of authenticity, a place in which we find ourselves in any given moment, at any given time, in any situation, in any relationship that we have. And we can share these things from our hearts. We can share these things because as we get in touch with what do we need to, or how do we need to transform what keeps us from saying these things, or if you want to take it deeper, who, which is ultimately ourselves, who is keeping us from saying these things to ourselves and others and God? See, every time, probably every morning, as we look at ourselves in the mirror, we have these conversations with us. And how many times, you know, we've gone through hurts or pain or suffering in which we, you know, have this conversation with ourselves. And we just simply say, well, I can forgive that person, but I just can't forgive myself. I know that person did wrong and I understand why they did it, but I just want to keep beating myself up over and over again. I just can't believe I keep making the same mistakes. I just can't believe it. And we become bitter as a result. We don't realize it, but over time, it just starts to zap that energy and zap that strength and just keeps us in that illusion of, wait a minute. Being bitter is taking who we are away from us and away from others. It's actually robbing us of the greater things that we have to offer one another. To stand and claim our true, authentic selves. Or to reclaim that which we have allowed to be taken from us through one experience or another, or those gifts that we have given away, or those things that we have squelched because, well, nobody would appreciate that anyway. And that's living in that denial. Not realizing that we have everything we have simply coming into the world. And actually, our gifts and our graces that we have are really not meant for us, because there's other people out there who need our gifts and our graces, and we need their gifts and their graces. And so when we discover, you know, our gifts, our talents, our strengths, our skills, and so forth, we are benefiting everyone. And when other people discover their talents and gifts and graces and skills, they are benefiting us and everyone as well. Well, as I mentioned earlier in the show, that saying the four things that matter the most really for me started in the whole dying, that my experience of a nine-year-old sitting at my great-grandmother's funeral and just wondering why these words of so-called comfort were not providing me any comfort. Perhaps because I didn't hear the four things that matter the most. Now, not saying that, you know, there was something, you know, that was supposed to be said, but if there was ever a context in which those things should appropriately be said, it's certainly at a funeral. Or maybe you've had experiences of having to say goodbye to a loved one. I've sat at the bedside of many a person who were in their final days, and in just being that presence with the family, and perhaps the patient themselves, the family member who was dying, was unresponsive or they were sleeping, and we would have some quiet conversations, just the family and I, and sooner or later it comes up to, I don't know what to say. I know I should be saying something, but can they hear me? It's like, yes, they can hear you. And perhaps they're waiting for you to say something. What would you like to say? Well, I don't know. Where do you begin? I don't know. Where do you begin? Well, have you thanked them for their life? How much, you know, they meant to you? The lessons that they taught you? The lessons that they brought you? Maybe something happened years and years ago that you've never asked forgiveness for. Maybe you need to forgive them. Now's the chance. And when was the last time you told them you loved them? Perfect opportunity to say what we need to say at any given time. But please let us not forget that these four things that matter the most are not just meant exclusively for those moments when we say goodbye to a loved one. We should be saying them in the living years. I think it was, I forget how many years ago, but the group Mike and the Mechanics came out with the song In the Living Years. Great song. Just a wonderful song. But the song also talks about, you know, it's too late when we die. You know, we should be saying these things in the living years. And on one hand, that's true. But I, on the other hand, I don't necessarily agree that when a loved one has died, that that's it. We've missed our chance. Because we could spend the rest of our lives beating ourselves up emotionally, psychologically, and so forth, just saying, I could have, I should have, I would have said something, but I just didn't know what to say. Well, in bereavement counseling, there is always an opportunity to say these four things that matter the most for their sake and our sake. We do have this blood-soul connection with our ancestors, our blood-soul connection with our families, that I'm a firm believer, communication, a heart-to-heart and a soul-to-soul, it will be heard. If you've ever been in the habit of going to gravesides or cemeteries and you go to visit the grave of a loved one, we're already carrying on these conversations in our hearts and in our minds anyway. We're already remembering about the last time perhaps we saw our loved ones, or that last fight that we had with them, or that disagreement, or something that sticks in our memory. We replay those conversations over and over and over again. Being at the cemetery is also a wonderful opportunity to, let's say, roll out a blanket, to sit there and have a heart-to-heart conversation. And maybe it's not as simple as, you know, I forgive you for, please forgive me for, thank you for, and I love you because. Maybe that's a two-hour conversation you need to have with them, because there's a lot of things that you need to work out, you need to work through, that you need to get off your chest. Maybe there are just some deep, deep, deep-seated emotional wounds, psychological wounds, physical wounds, spiritual wounds, that have just really left you shattered. Where do you begin? Where do you begin by, you know, what piece do you pick up first? How do you put your pieces back together? How do we know that what this piece goes with that piece and something else, you know? But we can begin the conversation. Even if we're not ready to say, I forgive you for, we can still come from a place of authenticity. We can still say, you know, I am not ready to say to you, I forgive you. I am not ready to say to you, please forgive me. I'm not ready to say thank you. And I'm not ready to say I love you. Those are honest statements. But it is a place to begin. It's from that place of woundedness. A place acknowledging that I've been hurt. I've been hurt deeply. But also it comes from a place of acknowledging the fact that we're not going to allow bitterness to keep robbing us of our peace in our hearts and our peace of mind at night when we can't get to sleep and we're tossing and turning because we're racked with guilt and we just churn those memories over and over and over again. Simply because we are unwilling to let go. We are unwilling to acknowledge. As I said, I became familiar with Ira Byock's work when I was doing bereavement counseling, loss and grief counseling. And there were many people who just weren't quite ready to go down the road, so to speak, of please forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, I love you. They just simply weren't ready. And so we just had a conversation of like, okay, I understand that. I get that. What else can we talk about in terms of what has happened? What has happened to you? What are some things that can perhaps move you into this you know, forgiving a person a little bit more, or asking for forgiveness a little bit more than where you were, let's say, perhaps last week or the week before that. It comes from a willingness. But there's one thing for sure. When we find that place within ourselves of forgiveness, we find that place of gratitude, we find that place of unconditional love, it opens up to having powerful, powerful relationships. Forgiveness always leads to gratitude, and gratitude always leads to opening our hearts to channeling love in all relationships. You know, there once was a time in which I really struggled with the fact that I didn't really know my father. I was 20 when he died, and I certainly didn't know my grandfather, for he died in the coal mines when my father was about 2 years old, and my father just simply grew up without a father. And, you know, we had some pictures, you know, it was just like, okay, my father had no memory and so forth and so on. And there was a time when I think last week I shared a little bit about going back through the family tree and, you know, out there in the western part of Pennsylvania going to the coal mines. He'd actually died in a coal mining accident. And I was able to go to the exact opening of the now abandoned coal mine. And it was just one of those things where it just kept, you know, God just kept tugging on my heart. You need to go there. You need to go there. You need to go there. And it's like, okay. And the whole way out, traveling through the turnpike, I just got more and more of this, you know, heart tug that don't worry about what to say. It'll come to you when you're there. Okay. So I finally get out there after about a four and a half hour drive. I find this coal mine entrance, and I am sitting there, and I am just quietly reflecting. And I've, you know, I'm of the tradition where I took my my Native American drum, and I drummed a little bit, and I offered prayers, and I offered some prayer ties of tobacco, and just offering thanksgiving for the opportunity to be at this coal mine entrance. And just sitting there, and I just started to pour out my heart. And I just, as if my grandfather was right there, and I just said, you know, grandfather, this is your grandson. We've never met, but your blood is in my veins. I've heard the stories of how you died. I've heard the stories of how 40 other coal miners died years and years before your coal mining accident. I've heard the stories about when he was perhaps a teenager and he lived through that accident that killed 40 miners. And what that conversation must have been like with his father to say, I'm going to go work in those coal mines. Yeah, I'm going to go work in those mines that keep having the collapse and everything. Yeah, that's where I'm going to work. I can just imagine the conversation that he had, or perhaps what his own mother was feeling when he agreed to do that, or perhaps my own grandmother, who he was married to at the time, and what that must have been like to kiss him goodbye every morning, not knowing, will I ever see him again? See, she didn't really talk about him all that much. We just had a few pictures and a couple of stories, but that's okay. That's all I needed. So I'm sitting there and I'm just pouring out my heart, and I just remembered the four things that matter the most. And I just said, look, please forgive me. I've been holding this grudge that I just became aware of, you know, for you dying at such a young age. He was in his, you know, mid-20s when he died in this coal mining accident. And I had this grudge that I didn't have a grandfather to grow up with on my dad's side. And then I was mad because my father didn't have a father. You know, but I was holding on to this grudge, and I just said, look, that's unfair to you. I am so, so sorry. And I also asked, you know, him to forgive me, and just spent a good while just going back and forth with just on the subject of forgiveness. And then I moved on to gratitude. And I just said, thank you. Thank you that you went to work. Thank you that you provided for your family. Thank you that you had my father. Because if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't be here. And guess what? I'm here. And now I have a son. And guess what? He's here. So it's actually your great-grandson now. And spent several more minutes just going back and forth with gratitude and just appreciating where I had come from and who I had come from. Just good, hard-working, salt-of-the-earth kind of people that just perhaps had to do what they had to do, going into a coal mine. And that was, I mean, we're talking, early 1900s. Definitely unsafe conditions, not like today. And after I got done with forgiveness, and after I had exhausted gratitude, I moved on to love. Again, I just said, we've never met. Your blood is in my veins, and I love you for it. I thank you for giving me life. Thank you for loving my grandmother. Thank you for loving your son. Thank you for loving me. Thank you for loving your great-grandson and however far the family line continues. And I just sat there quietly. And I felt his presence. I just felt this love and this acceptance like I had never felt before. And then it was time for me to head home. And this is where the plot gets very interesting. See, I'm coming back on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and I think the Turnpike now is at, 65 miles an hour speed limit? Well, back then I was doing a cool 70, maybe 75 miles an hour, because I wanted to get home because I had finished everything I needed to finish. And didn't the darndest thing happen? I started to get this vision. I just, quick, blips or flashes of just my grandfather in his coal mining, outfit with, covered in soot and his helmet and, his light on top of his head with, his long sleeve shirt covered in, soot all over his face, holding this old banged up lunchbox. And he had his arm around my father, who was about his age at the time when he died. My father was in a white shirt and his chinos and his penny loafers. And I had to pull the car over, and I just sat there and I just wept. I just couldn't believe it. It was just a wonderful gift that perhaps somewhere in the grand scheme of things that just extended beyond all time and space, there was this reconciliation between my grandfather, my father, and now son. It was a beautiful, beautiful vision. I will never forget that. They were smiling. They were kind of poking at each other at the sides and laughing and carrying on. And I cherish that memory. You see, this is the power of saying the four things that matter the most. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you, and I love you. I have yet to come up with anything else that can replace these four things, but you know what? They don't need to be replaced because the power lies in the fact that they restore relationships. It doesn't matter what the hurt is. It doesn't matter what the pain is. It doesn't matter how shattered our lives have been. To come to that realization that we are no longer going to allow what has happened to us to dictate who we think we are. Instead of coming to the realization, coming to the truth of there is so much more to us that we can't even fathom yet. There is so much more to us that we have yet to reclaim. There is so much more to us that perhaps other people in their prayers are waiting for us to discover and reclaim our giftedness, our uniqueness, because it could provide healing for them. It could provide grace for them. It could provide the love and the understanding to help them heal and enhance their relationships. We never know where we're going to be. We could be standing in the line in the grocery store waiting for somebody to get through all their coupons and struggling to try to make the credit card machine work or something. We've been there too. How many times do you have to swipe your card when it's not working and you get frustrated and you get embarrassed because there's a line forming behind you, albeit these days at just a safe social distance? But still, a line is forming. And yet all it takes is a kind word. And in that moment, grace has shown up. Because we realize that we not only carry the four things that matter the most, that because of the grace of God, and because we are reclaiming our authentic selves, we are those four things that matter the most. We are forgiveness. We are gratitude. We are love. We are grace in the moment. What keeps us from saying these things to the people in our lives today? Who keeps us from saying these things that we know we ought to be saying to our loved ones today? What are those things that we need to work through? Where are those wounds that we need to heal from? The grace is always, always there. Last story I'll share with you here. One of my favorite teachers, Bob Wicks, who's now retired, used to say that an acorn, planted in the ground, has a natural propensity to grow towards this huge oak tree. That and pine cones were actually my favorite things to collect in the woods. But, there are many things that can actually stunt the growth of that acorn growing into this huge, strong, strong oak tree. It could be stunted because of lack of sunlight. It could be stunted for lack of water. It could be stunted by external damage to its bark or an internal disease that just slowly rots it from the inside. But he always was fond of saying that if you remove those obstacles, those things that kind of get in the way, the acorn is free to grow into a healthy oak tree. And immediately he took that right into a psychology lesson for us. And he said, the same is true with us and our growth, our maturity, our healing. We come into this world and we have this natural propensity to grow. We have this natural propensity to, when we find healing, that we're just going to then breathe life around us. But what's in our lives that stunt our growth? The wounds we still carry, the bitterness we cling to, the unwillingness to forgive. When we are able to remove those things, we do more than just grow. We step into an authentic self that the energy changes the world because it changes lives. If you've never read Ira Byock's book, I invite you to do so. It is well worth the read. It is a book about death and dying, yes, for sure, at the beginning, but halfway through, it is a book about living, the living relationships. Well, be sure to tune in next week for next week's show, Peekaboo, Finding the Extraordinary God in the Ordinary, and I'll share some stories with you about my latest trip to India. I am Dr. James Houck, and it has been my wonderful pleasure just to spend this time with you. Do take care, and may God's light always, always, always shine in you, on you, and through you. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio.